Another day, another dollar as I holler to the world. I love the way I'm living, love the Gucci, love the girls. Love the parties and the club, love the models and hot tubs. Love the German engineer and sent on deep dish dubs. Another tour around the world, entertaining the fans. I love walking through the airport, taking pictures, shaking hands. Every day for me's an oyster, crack it open, find a pearl. I love the way I'm living, is what I holler to the world.
Welcome to Marking Out with MVP and Dwayne Swayze.
I'm still MVP.
Yeah, I'm still Dwayne Swayze. How you doing today, brother?
Man, as you can tell, I'm not well, man. I'm fighting, man. I've been under the weather. So, you know, we pull no punches here. I'm sick. I had a whirlwind last few weeks, man. As you saw on social media, a lot of you who follow me saw, I took my son and met up with my brother and my nephew out in Japan. We spent a wonderful week in Tokyo and Nagoya. Had some amazing, amazing experiences together, you know, and 7 days out there. And then flew back from Tokyo to Houston and got back around 2 p.m. And then I dropped my son off to his mom that evening and then had a 6 a.m. flight to Cleveland for AEW. And then went from Cleveland to perform with Orange 9mm.
Oh, nice.
With Chaka Malik and the squad, and shot a video for their new song, Turn It Up. And then took care of some other very fruitful business meetings while I was out there. I won't talk about that yet. Then got back with just enough time to turn it around and head right back out to Cincinnati. And then coming back from Cincinnati, my flight was canceled. And that damn Shelton Benjamin, as we had to disembark from the plane after we sat on there for a few hours, there were some maintenance issues. He was right in front of me, and he got the last flight out that day. And it was a connection through Chicago. He didn't get home till like 11 at night.
The standard of excellence, man.
Yes, the standard of excellence. And I was not in any shape of excellence because I felt myself getting sick. And while I was at the airport, man, I was just getting weak and feeling hot.
Damn.
And there was no way I was going to be able to sit at the airport for another 3 or 4 hours waiting for a flight anyway. So it's kind of a blessing in disguise. I went back to the hotel room and I was out. I was in bed, just done. And then I made the 7 a.m. flight home. And I made sure that I was all covered up and everything. And then I got home and I've been in bed since then. This is my first time out of bed, out of the house. You see what I do for you? I do this for you.
And now I'm going to be sick for the next couple of weeks.
No, see, that's why I didn't dap anybody coming in. I would keep in that space, you know, managing the distance as we do jiu-jitsu. I'm a little under the weather, but we are going to get these episodes cranked out.
Yes, sir.
For you, because we guarantee you every Monday, unless you're a Patreon subscriber.
Yeah.
Then you get the early scoop, right?
P, what was that you and the family were doing where y'all were, you know, you had the swords?
That was the, and they have a few locations, but the one we went to was in Shinjuku, which is an area of Tokyo, the Samurai Museum.
Okay.
And you can go there, but they also, you can upgrade to have the samurai experience, where they actually, as you see, we took some pictures that I posted where we have on like samurai armor. I don't know if I posted those, and I don't think I posted those, but we got on the Kubota helmets and the gear and with swords. And then they have a class where they have a sensei who teaches you with replica swords.
Okay.
You know, how to do the movements. And then after going over it several times, he kind of leads you off camera. And then everybody gets together and we get to do the whole
motion. That's what was filmed.
Yeah. So that was amazing. And you know my son, love.
Yeah, that. He looks so happy, man. Oh, shout out Cavs.
It was really cool. Then after that, you know, they do a very informative, you know, tour. And, you know, my nerddom with Japanese history and whatnot, I knew all the answers and all the questions. And I'd stop putting my hand up and let other people answer. I felt like a show-off. And then after that, they have, it was really cool, they have a shuriken throwing contest.
What's that?
Well, commonly known to you savages, you uncivilized people, as Chinese stars.
Oh,
there's
that's
no such thing.
Ninja Turtles for your boy.
Shuriken. Shurikenness. Yeah, they have a room where they have like these like foam targets on the wall. And the shurikens are not real metal ones, but they're made out of like a heavy plastic. And everybody lines up. And it's like a little contest, you know, who can hit the bullseye. And
dope.
Yeah, it was a really, really good experience, man. My son and my nephew got to ride the Shinkansen, the bullet train. They loved it.
Oh, sweet.
We got to meet some sumo wrestlers at the airport. We got to see my good friend Gosh Tsuyoshi.
Gosh.
Back from back in the day, my New Japan days. We got to see fat ass Masa. Masa, get well. Masa, he's a super fan in Japan. All the boys know him. Yeah, he's got pictures going back to the 90s.
Oh, shit.
Taking pictures with wrestling wrestlers. And he's in poor health right now. He's in the hospital. So speedy recovery to you, fat ass Masa. And yeah, that was just an amazing time, man.
And I saw West Side Gunn shouted out Cam. I think he asked him to borrow his jacket.
Yeah, he... Yeah, but you know Cam stays fresh, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a magnificent trip. And you know, my son and my nephew got to experience another country. And I always say, man, if you have the ability to travel, do it. And if you don't, find a way to do it. Because the world is an amazing place, you know, and outside of the bubble we live in, your own community. We actually live in a global community. And, you know, I think we could eliminate lots of our differences if we took time to travel the world and realize how much we have in common as humans. But I'm not going to get on my soapbox and lecture anybody, but travel, go places, experience other cultures, other foods, other languages. You know, I people say all the time, and I know I'm going to get flack for this, but, you know, I don't care. People say things like, you know, well, I don't see color. Well, you should. You should see color. And we should celebrate it. We should celebrate our differences, our different languages and our complexions and our heritages and our histories. And we should appreciate our differences and exchange cultural information. And it's a beautiful thing. And I think that, you know, as humanity is a rainbow, if you will, you know, and I think it's a beautiful thing. So. Yeah, that was a week
on.
In Japan.
Right on. So, you know, we got to shout out the drink back here before we get started.
Yeah. So, you know, normally we, you know, for a long time, we're displaying Devil's River. And thanks, Dave. In celebration of my time in Japan, I decided to break out a bottle of one of my favorite. For relaxing times, make it Suntory times. This is Hibiki, but this isn't the top shelf. This is the affordable Hibiki that you can buy for about $60 or $70 a bottle. This isn't the 21
10-4.
Or the 30, which are thousands of dollars a bottle now. And but this is good stuff if you know what you're drinking. So I'll pour a little bit for you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
And a little bit for me. And let the festivities begin.
All right. So I'm not sure if you woke up in Tokyo when this happened or if you were in Cincinnati or one of the many places you've been the last couple weeks. But some dirt sheets are saying that you have backstage heat. They claim you pushed back on dropping to jet speed at All In Texas, and that you have a personal issue with Speedball Mike Bailey. What's true? What isn't? And what's your message to fans who take those reports at face value?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. And just to let you guys know, to keep this as authentic as we can, I rarely screen the questions because I really want to get, you know, I want to give you an authentic answer. So you hit me with your questions and I'll give you an answer. And I kind of had a suspicion that this was coming. Because you're one of those people that gobbles up that dirt sheet bullshit.
I got to.
But I get it, though. I get it. So let me elaborate on that. First things first. At no point did I ever say that I dislike Speedball Mike Bailey. I don't have an issue with Speedball. We work together. We see each other. We shake hands, and we keep it moving. Like, there's no issue there.
About these tag teams, man.
Once again, I'm pretty disappointed that.
Fuck you, Speedball.
Well, fuck you too, MVP.
Hey, tell him.
Fuck you, Speedball. Fuck you, Speedball.
Well, fuck you guys too.
I don't have any problems with any of the talent that I work with at AEW. Mike Bailey's one of the nicest guys around. I don't have a problem with him. And there was some other bullshit somebody brought my attention to that, man, can you hear that? So I, just in case you can't hear it, where there's a bar right next to us where Man United, my team, is taking on Arsenal, the Arse, taking up the Arse. And, I don't know what's going on, and it's killing me because I'm hearing all kinds of explosions and the fandom over there. And seeing that it's mostly Arsenal fans, that's probably not good for Man United. But anyway, getting back to the question at hand, that's bullshit. Just straight bullshit. I've never been a fan of the dirt sheets. And there's a reason that they've been historically called the dirt sheets. You know, you're getting the dirt, you know. And my personal opinion is that these people are leeches on my profession. They make a living off of my profession and they give absolutely nothing. I know there are certain wrestlers that do benefit because, you know, they get good write-ups and, you know, things like that. And I understand the way that the business has changed, especially as social media has come into play. When you have one of these influential dirt sheet writers give you a positive review, then because for whatever ridiculous reason, and I'll get into that, so much gravitas is put on these idiots' opinions, it can get you more bookings. It can get you more money. Mm-hmm. It can raise your popularity. So I think one of the problems is we have a generation of wrestlers that are wrestling for an audience of one instead of the audience that's in the house because they want somebody to, you know, give them a favorable star rating. And I understand that, and it's not totally their fault. But I also understand as a fan, and you always ask me about it. That's how this show came up.
100%.
Because you always asking me about
it. That's why we're here.
So I guess that's one good thing that came out of it, right? If I'm keeping it real, I mean, I get it because everybody wants to peek behind the curtain. You know, everybody wants to know how the magician does his tricks. I get that. But as a wrestler, I feel like these people make a living off my career, my business. They take and they give nothing. And I don't see... I do see, like I said, for the younger wrestlers. I just don't, professionally speaking, what happens in the booking room, what happens in the locker room should stay in the locker room, should stay, you know, in the office. It shouldn't be fodder for fans. And in my opinion, they call themselves journalists. It's yellow journalism. It's rumor and innuendo, gossip, disguised as journalism, because I've read so many things through the years reported about me that were just abjectly false. Just there's no truth at all. And every now and again, there's a kernel of truth, but I don't want to spend too much time talking about these idiots because I have zero respect for them. You know, you got guys like Chris Van Vliet that do interviews.
Right.
And that I respect. You know, you want to talk to the wrestlers and get their opinions. But when you pass off rumor and innuendo as facts, well, you due to a source. Well, put your name on your shit then. If you got something to say, then say it with your whole chest. You know? You know me for a long time.
Yep.
And if you're a fan of MVP, you know I'm honest to a fault. I have never had a problem with saying who I don't like. You know who I don't like. I don't bite my tongue. And some people love me for that. And others hate me for that. And I'm good with that. You know why? Because I come as advertised. And when I look in the mirror, I'm okay with the guy that looks back. So again, from a fan's perspective, I understand why you, of course, I get it. And for, you know, some of the younger wrestlers that are trying to come up, you know, that are really trying to, you know, get booked and get their names out there. I get that, you know, but I don't have any respect for that dirt sheet gossip because overwhelmingly what I see being reported, it's just not true. And I'm not going to spend much more time addressing it because, again, I'm a professional. And what happens in the locker room and what happens in the office should stay in the locker room and the office. You as fans should be able to watch the product and enjoy it without being concerned about who's beefing with who in the locker room and all that. And to be honest, as far as I know, amongst talent at AEW, I think everybody pretty much gets along amongst the talent. I mean, yeah, you're always going to have professional, you know, disagreements and you know, it's everybody's, you know, jockeying for a position. Everybody wants to be the top guy. So, yeah, you're going to have rifts and you're going to have issues. But for the most part, I don't know of anybody in the AEW locker room that has like legitimate beef with anybody.
We need to get those shirts out. Y'all remember that? All right. So as a follow up, when, if ever, should a wrestler address a report? One of these, you know, dirt sheet reports.
Again, man, I think we give too much gravitas to these people anyway. I think if it's something, if it's just some little silly rumor or whatever, just let that shit rock, you know? Okay. But I think if it's something assassinating your character or impugning your professionalism, then, yeah, you kind of get put in a position sometimes that you have to speak up and address the issues. But I just want to tell you, the fan, these people who give their opinions on matches are no more important than you. Your opinion is every bit as important as their opinion, if not more so, because you buy the tickets to go to the shows, you buy the pay-per-views, you are a passionate fan. Your star rating is as important, if not more important, than anybody else's star rating. I've said repeatedly, I understand why you like it, but it's worthless, actually. Your opinion is what matters. And for you wrestlers, you know, especially you young men and women coming up, your payoff, your star rating is that audience giving you that applause at the end of your match. When you get a pop on the 1, 2, 3, that is your payoff. That's your star rating. The fans will let you know how good your match is. Don't leave it up to some idiot behind the computer saying how good your match was or wasn't. And, you know, I'm going to go off on a rant. Let me reel myself in. I'm still already feeling a little ill. Let me take a quick sip just to kind of.
I was about to call in for some popcorn, man.
No, I'm done with that, man. Just generally, don't address it. But if it's something that's impugning your character or calling into question your professionalism in certain situations, then, you know, you might have to. But otherwise, fans, enjoy wrestling. Watch the matches. Get involved in the feuds. Stop trying to be Monday, as we say, Monday morning quarterbacks, Monday morning bookers. Just enjoy the show. And stop giving these idiots power over, you know, your career or your programming that you like to watch. And with that, I'm done.
What's your rule for when to take things to the floor in a match and how long to stay there?
Oh, wow. There's no hard or soft rule. But no, that's not true. There is. Depending on where you're at on the card, traditionally, the school of thought is that each match should build up to the main event. And through the years, I think we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit, you know, because everybody wants to go out there and have the follow that match. And as a professional, you should always want to go out there and put on your best match. But if the very first match is crashing through tables and diving over the top to the floor, then, you know, what are they going to do in the main event, you know? So it's supposed to build up to a main event. So, you know, a lot of the time, you know, the booker or the person in charge will dictate the lower card matches should stay in the ring. And generally speaking, unless there's a specific spot in the match where somebody is taking a bump to the floor, getting thrown out over the top rope or something, usually, you know, you get right back in because there's a count going on, you know, generally a 10 count. And if you're outside of the ring for 10 seconds, you lose. So the simple question is 9 seconds, get your ass back in the ring or you lose. But then there's also the other part where if you have like a hardcore match or if you have a triple threat match where, you know, the rules don't really apply, then you're allowed to stay on the floor for a while. Sometimes, like, I like having fun, especially on smaller indie shows where, especially if it's a smaller indie show and, you know, I'm one the name on the card or something like that, then I like to have fun and fight outside the ring and fight through the crowd a little bit, you know, because it's just exciting and it's fun. Right. People get to be up close and personal. But usually when you do that, it professionally speaking, you should check to make sure that nobody else is doing that. Because if everybody's going out and fighting on the floor, then, you know, what are you doing? You know? And how long should you be out there? Not terribly long. I mean, everyone's looking at the ring as the center focus. So most of your match should take place in the ring. I remember years ago when I was coming up on the South Florida indie scene, Dave Johnson, rest in power, taught me. And he was taught by the devil himself, Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan was brilliant because he was, you know, in his late 50s, early 60s, still getting booked on shows. And he would show up, the match would start in the ring, they'd fight out to the floor, knock a bunch of chairs around, toss some garbage cans around, absolute chaos, fight back into the ring, there's a finish, 1, 2, 3. You think you just saw an amazing match, you saw a whole lot of nothing. Smoking mirrors, you know. It looked like just a tornado came through, it was chaos. Oh my God, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. No, Kevin was a master at making you think you saw something. And Dave Johnson learned that from Kevin, and Kevin, and they both actually taught me that. And it's just that's fun. But generally speaking, the short answer is 9 seconds outside the ring to beat the count and get back in. Unless it's a special rules match, then fighting outside the ring on the floor, you know, when they do big dives, big spots with multiple people, it's exciting and it's enjoyable. But everybody can't do it, or that takes away from the impact of the one match. Should be one match that does it. It's like, you know, when you have a show and every match has dives in it.
Right.
You know? Well, that takes away from the specialty of the dive.
Is it like a miss from the producer or the agent if every single match has the exact same, you know, kind of elements?
Show to show.
Show to show.
You know, it depends on what the person in charge of that show wants. Some people want absolute chaos from start to finish. And I've seen some indie shows where there is no rhyme or reason for anything. Start to finish is whatever. But if you go somewhere like WWE, you know, you are told exactly how much time you got, what you can do, and how much of it you can do. Because everything is building up to the main event, as it should be. And professionally, you usually check with other people.
Okay.
Because you don't want multiple ball shots on a show. You know, that should be one ball shot or a referee bump. You know, it should be one. If you got seven matches and five ref bumps, you know. So it just comes down to the professionalism and the people who are in charge and what they want for their show. You know, and nowadays it's harder to say what's right and wrong because there's shades of gray. You know, I use the pineapple pizza analogy. You know, some people say if you put pineapple on a pizza, it's sacrilegious. You're doing it wrong. But there's a lot of people who like Hawaiian pizza. So if somebody shows up and they want Hawaiian pizza, give them Hawaiian pizza. You know, I can't say you're doing it wrong if that's what you came to buy. So I'd like fighting out on the floor sometimes, as I said, you know, but generally the match is in the ring and it should stay primarily in the ring. So did I answer that?
Yes.
I'm a little brain foggy.
Yes, you definitely did. Yes, of course. And the Hibiki's helping too.
Yeah, well, they say that's what they say is medicine, right? Yeah. You put some on my gums. Certainly helps for my throat. But then again, people always ask, MVP, what happened to your voice? Whiskey, weed, women. Hank the Third, man. Hank Williams the Third. I got to play that song.
No, you. Yeah, I don't know the song.
Man, he has a very distinct twang. But he also does metal and hardcore, too. But the Whiskey, Weed, and Women, just the chorus. But the Whiskey, Weed, and Women got the upper hand.
Every time you mention that song, it makes me think of, I think it's a Lil Wayne song. I know you know what I'm talking about. Back off camera, PWA. So yeah. They must have got that song from this.
Probably. But Whiskey, Weed, and Women. I tell people that. I eat glass and I gargle kerosene. What are you gonna do? My father had a voice like this. Actually, share something personal. I always remember my father having a very gravelly voice. And I remember my mom telling me that my father used to have a beautiful voice and he used to sing to her. But from all the drinking and cigarette smoking, fucked it up. So I guess the apple don't fall too far from the tree, right? I suppose.
As a veteran, when you give notes to talent, what's your delivery so it lands as coaching and not politics?
It's funny you would ask me that question because I have a reputation in the industry for not doing politics. It's just not how I rock. And I like to think that most of the, it's going to cut two ways. And it depends on either your relationship with me personally or your maturity in the business. Because I remember when I first came up, I remember some of the OGs telling me, giving me advice, career advice, and how to approach a match with storytelling and execution. And a lot of the time, you know, I'd be like, oh, they just lazy. Oh, they don't want to do nothing. Oh, they don't want to work. Oh, that's the old man hating asshole, you know. And then as I progressed in the business and got some mileage and got some maturity, I realized, oh, they didn't know what they were talking about. Oh, okay. Now I understand why they were telling me that. Now, oh, it all makes sense. So if a young talent come up to me and ask me for my opinion or for some advice or feedback, you have a thing in pro wrestling where the rookies have been told for years to ask the veterans for feedback. And it's, and I've talked about it before, where some do it because it's the thing to do and others do it because they genuinely want the feedback so that they can get better. They want advice from somebody who's been around and made some money. And I would always take that advice and put it to work, that aptitude. And you know, when somebody like The Undertaker or Finley, you know, or Arn Anderson come up and tell you how to do something, well, if you don't do it, you're an idiot. So when I try to give advice, my reason for giving advice is because I genuinely want you to do better. Because if you do better, we do better. The more people you have on a show that are performing at a higher level and are executing better and are better storytellers to to get that emotional response from the audience, we all do better. The fans do better. Everybody benefits. So I don't do politics. There's no politics there. You know, if I'm telling you to slow it down and cut some of that stuff out, it's not because I don't want you to have a good match. It's because I want you to have a better match.
Right.
And I think I've talked about this before, but, you know, there are a few of the younger guys on AEW where I've told them, hey, everything was great, but you had too many false finishes. You didn't need all those false finishes. And you can hear it because the first false finish, oh, and the second false finish, oh, and that third false finish, oh, and that fourth false finish, oh, you had them. And it takes a while to get that experience to know when to say, nope, take it home now. They're not going to get any higher than this. Let's go. That other stuff that we had figured in, cut it. Take it home now. And I may have talked about this before, but it's definitely something that comes with experience. And if I'm telling you that, it's not because I don't want you to have the greatest match. It's because I want you to.
Right, right.
And you can hear it from the audience. And there's been times when I've talked to, like Kyle Fletcher and I talked about it one time, you know, and he said, yeah, you're right. I heard it. I got it. You know, don't work against yourself. So I gotta say, in my entire career, I don't ever remember anybody accusing me of, you know, working politics. But there are young people, I'm certain, that have heard me give them advice that said, fuck that guy. I'm certain.
Does he know?
Yeah, because I did it when I was a young guy. You know, some of these older guys, man, shy, you don't know what you're talking about. You're just old. You don't want to. Oh, you're just lazy. You don't want to, or whatever, you know. My favorite phrase, youthful exuberance.
Right, right. So, yeah, I imagine at some of the indie shows, when you're the name on the card, that you've got a huge line of folks just waiting to talk to you. Is that
you not? You imagine wrong.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Oh, youthful exuberance then, right?
Hey, man, they know better than me. You know, they're over. They're booked strong in their community. You know, I don't know. But it's not an ego trip. I genuinely want the guys coming up behind me to do well. And if you take the time to come and ask me for feedback, I'm going to give it to you raw. And there are a lot of young guys who might watch this who will, they know, they've come up to me and I've said to them, do you want me to tell you what you need to hear? Or do you want me to tell you what you want to hear? I'm going to tell you the truth.
Right up.
No cap, as they say, you know? And, you know, and sometimes it's tough love, you know, and I'll give them tough love. And, you know, but I always try to build them up before I cut them down. I'll try to say, this was great. This was great. This was bad. Hey, you know, the thing you did right there, don't ever do that again. Bruno Sassy, good friend of mine, one of my mentors from South Florida. He gave me some advice that I always remembered and I've tried to pass on. He said, don't do anything in the ring that you do good. Only do the things that you do great. Simple, but wow, yeah. Just do the things that you do great. And, you know, we were talking before about live events and the lack of live events, not giving young talent the opportunity to work on those things in front of a live crowd. You know, you got to do, you know, like comics, you got to hit the stage, you got to go to different spots, you got to work your material in front of different audiences. And I remember, I think it was Ardmore, Oklahoma for World Class, an indie show. Shout out to my man, Gerald. There was a small show one day, and unfortunately, there wasn't a huge turnout. And, you know, they had a little meeting before the show. And I told the guys, I said, hey, today is the perfect day for you guys to work on your stuff. Work on the stuff. Try a match today where you don't spend 3 hours talking about your 10-minute match.
Okay.
Go out there today, have a finish in place, and see what you can do. calling it on the fly. You want to work on TV, that's where you want to go. Well, hey, man, you know, we've talked about when you're on live television, you know, things go. You have to be able to work on the fly. Here's a great opportunity to do that. So, medicine break.
Hibiki flu.
Yeah, I like that. Hibiki flu. I'm sorry, where was I?
Working a live match, or not spending 3 hours to talk about a 10-minute match, to just go out there and work.
Yeah. Just having the opportunities to work on your stuff and polishing up your execution, your presence. You got a new move you want to try. You know, don't try it out for the first time on a big pay-per-view. You know, that's something you work out on the live events. But, you know, as I talked about, nobody's doing live events anymore. Or, you know, even WWE has scaled it back dramatically. So take your chances and work on your stuff on the smaller shows. And when you get to the bigger shows, that's when you break that stuff out, once you've had a chance to polish it up and make sure you're confident with what you're doing. Yeah, I'm satisfied with that answer.
And four.
I hope you are too. Hey, and let me say this. If you're still watching at this point, because we forgot to do this, please do me a personal favor. Like, comment, let me do it in reverse. Subscribe, like, and comment.
And share.
If you like this, please tell your fellow wrestling fans about it. We have great conversations about wrestling. I try to give you my insight based on my experience. We try to keep it pretty positive. You're not going to get much rage bait, you know, or clickbait, any of that stuff. I mean, eventually, you know, I'll talk about some of the people that I don't like.
It's going to happen. I got it written down.
But right now, we just want to build up a good audience, good rapport. So please, join us in our conversation. This is water because I need to have some because I'm still sick. And if I have too much of this, I won't get better. But yeah, man, we try to have good vibes. Please subscribe, like, leave us a comment, tell us what you think, and share it with your fellow wrestling friends that you think would enjoy. Appreciate you.
Before we get out of here, P., we have a question from a Patreon subscriber. So I want to ask that to you. The link to our Patreon is in the pinned comment below. Make sure you guys click the link. You can start off for free. And I promise you, once you see the amount of content that we deliver weekly, you're going to upgrade to one of the higher tiers.
We over deliver on the Patreon because I'm going to say from my heart and soul, I appreciate the fact that you are willing to be a paid subscriber to our Patreon. Nowadays, times are tough. And the fact that you are willing to part with some of your money for our content, I want to make sure that you get your money's worth and that you are a very happy subscriber. So Dwayne is always on my back to make sure that there are wonderful goodies in store for you. So please check out the Patreon. And I'm pretty confident that you will not be disappointed.
So shout out to Mike Bradley from Louisiana. What up, Mike? Mike wants to ask you.
Gumbo strong
style. Yeah, gumbo strong style. Have you ever considered writing a book on your life and career or turning it into a screenplay for a feature film?
The short answer is yes. I have considered it many times, but I am one of the laziest, hardworking people you will ever meet. And I have not begun that manuscript. Because I don't want a ghostwriter. I want to write it myself, just like Chris Jericho, just like Mick Foley, just like some of these other guys, Bret Hart, that actually wrote their own books.
Didn't I read some chapters? I remember something about a spider.
I couldn't find it. Okay, so that was my good friend Michael. UK brethren, we were working on a book about my prison experiences and They like, and it was the spider fights.
Spider fights. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
We got to do that Patreon, man.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that might be a good story to just tell on an actual show.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. When I brought a praying mantis to the spider fights in prison. Yeah. Great story. And truth is stranger than fiction. But I have thought about it, and many people have asked me about it, and it's something that I want to do. And I've actually talked to my good friend, Dave Bautista.
Thank you, Dave.
We've talked about, with his production company, taking the steps to turn my life story into a movie. And it's something that I trust Dave to do it. I wouldn't trust just anybody with it, because my life story is not PG, man. My life story is rated R as fuck.
Is there something higher than that?
Rated X. Yeah. I mean, legit. But we have to get it like PG-13 at the minimum. But yeah, it's something Dave and I have talked about, and it's on the back burner. I actually talked to my younger brother, Dean Rose, about one day just getting a bottle and sitting. We'll let our kids play, and we'll sit on the veranda on a wonderful day and sip, and I'll just tell him everything so that if something happens to me before I write the book, he's got all of my story, and
right on.
He could write it, and you know, he could oversee the rigmarole of publishing and all that. But yeah, man. And my life is a movie, man. The movie in the making, from my teenage years in Miami as a graffiti artist / gang member, becoming an armed robber, going to prison, 9.5 years in prison, and all the bullshit I survived and saw in there, and then coming out and becoming being a bouncer and bodyguard on South Beach and selling weed and steroids to support my wrestling habit. And going on to eventually making it as a professional wrestler. And, you know, just, you know, like James Cagney said, top of the world, ma, top of the world, your black sheep son made it. So yeah, Mike, it's been talked about many times. I just haven't done it yet, but eventually, hopefully, before this ticker gives out or my brain explodes, we'll get it done. Hey, Dave, can we get together and talk about this at some point? This big movie star, A-list movie star buddy of mine.
Hey, man. Well, I got an idea for another A-list star to play me in your movie.
Oh, okay. Who's going to play you?
His name is Dwayne. I won't say his last name.
Oh, get the list.
He could just wear a wig, man. It'd be cool.
I thought you were going to say Michael B. Jordan.
No, man.
He's not tall enough.
Though, yeah, we got to go with The Rock.
One Dwayne for another.
Yeah. It'd be-
Who's going to play me? Because you got to get the younger version of me and the older version of me.
Oh, it's Carmelo.
Carmelo plays a young
NBA. Yeah.
You know, actually, that's pretty good. Although I think he's a little too small physically to play, because he's, I mean.
10'4", right? But it's just like with Dwayne Johnson with me. You know,
it's a movie. Dwayne's a little too small to play. Not enough muscle to play. Yeah, I get it. All right. See how much fun we had here? You should join us and have fun with us too. But yeah, that's the answer to your question, Mike. Is that it? Is that a wrap?
I think we're good. Yeah.
Okay. So on that note, for relaxing times, make it Suntory times. And yeah, see you, Space Cowboy.
I just lay back in something new. Whiskey 21 and over low ball. Make it too neat. Dizza from Harlem. Yeah, I'm from Houston off of Fondra. Mike Mazan in real world flow. Awesome. Plant these seeds in the streets and in weeks. Watch it blossom. Dark night. Riding on chrome. Swinging through Gotham. It's me and Pete. Repaving these roads.
Your check. Your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.